Annie E. Casey Foundation.
You are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And, excuse me, I'm Arlene Engelhardt, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. I do have a couple of important announcements or information that affects today, so I'd like to get them in now. Protect your privacy, Constitution Revision Committee alert. The last committee hearing before Proposition 22 becomes an amendment on the ballot is this morning, or begins later this morning. So call the commissioner's offices. They're posted on our Facebook page. And the suggested wording from several organizations that have brought this to our attention, I urge you to ensure that protections guaranteed under Florida's Privacy Clause of the Constitution continue to protect a woman's most personal and private decisions regarding her own body. Please vote against Proposal 22. And that's the important issue. Please vote against Proposal 22.
Florida actually has had far more protection to privacy in our Constitution than many other states. And it's actually one of the big reasons that here in this state we have been able to fight a lot of the restrictions on women's reproductive choices, period. And so it really is critical. And, oh, I thought you had another one, too.
I do. Yeah. And today we also applaud the Latino women who have gone up to Tallahassee. They're spending today in Tallahassee to remind Florida legislators that anti-women and anti-immigrant rhetoric, politics, and policies are not welcome in our state. So hooray for them. And then, did you know that WMNF is a nonprofit radio station that's mostly funded by donations from listeners like you? Thanks to our current members, we wouldn't be on the air right now without you. Our winter pledge drive is February 8th through the 15th, but you can renew or join today. Go to WMNF.org or call 813-238-8001. We certainly hope you'll support this show, and so we'd appreciate it if you go to WMNF.org and put something in the tip jar or call the station and tell them that you'd like your support to go to this show. But do support our station. It's an important part of this community.
Well, we have an exciting show planned. I tell you, Arlene, we've been lucky in the last few weeks. We've had a lot of sheroes, if you will. Not very long ago, Dr. Sandra Steingraber was here trying to point out the dangers, particularly of fracking to the water. And then we had Tony Van Pelt last week. And now this week, another genuine shero that's been fighting for health care, single payer for all, whatever you want to call it, for years, Dr. Margaret Flowers. And luckily, also, she's going to be coming down to our area, the health conference that you want to tell us about it, Arlene?
There will be a Florida Healthcare Summit, and I do want to let you know I'm on the planning committee, so of course I'm biased toward it, but I think it's a very important issue of people getting together to try to work from the grassroots to get healthcare for everyone in our state. It will be on February 16th and 17th in West Palm Beach, and it would be wonderful if you can attend, but if you can't, do at least follow issues on the website. That's floridahealthcaresummit.org, and that's like all one word. Later in the show, I'll be giving away a free pair of tickets to that event, so if you're interested in going down to West Palm Beach, be sure to stay tuned.
And then in the second hour, I don't know how much you've been following the Michigan State just in the news. I think Engler, the one that's been appointed a temporary one, that's really caused a lot of problems because they feel he is such a totally, absolutely Spartan through and through. And so many of the athletes, particularly the women athletes and the students at Michigan State, are very, very wary that they really feel that they need perhaps an outside independent investigation what's been happening at Michigan State. And also with the gymnasts and other athletes, not just gymnasts, and Dr. Nasser. And so that we will be dealing with in the second hour and talk about heroes. You will hear the voices of some true, true heroes. So, but without further ado, I'm going to quickly put this music on, and then we will be coming back with Dr. Margaret Flowers.
What happened to the care in healthcare? care. Don't you know it's burning at the stake of the HMO? Profits over people, money over health. They play their games and deny the claims so they can build their wealth. What happened to the care in healthcare? Where'd it go? With money-driven healthcare, don't you know that the bottom line is
all? Well, I'm gonna pod this music down because I am so excited. With us on the phone is Dr. Margaret Flowers. And for you listeners that remember when we were fighting so much with about 8-9 years ago to try and get single payer Medicare for all, whatever you want to call it, we commonly had this woman as a guest on our show. She's an MD. She practiced pediatrics for 17 years. I believe she had her MD at Maryland and did her residency pediatrics at Johns Hopkins. She is currently co-director of Popular Resistance and coordinator of its Health Over Profit for Everyone campaign. She's an advisor to the Board of Physicians for a National Health Program and on a leadership council of the Maryland Healthcare is a Human Right. She also ran for the United States Senate, a candidate of the Green Party. So, Dr. Margaret Flowers, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me back. It's been a while. It's great to hear your voice.
Oh, well, Margaret, I'm telling you, I remember really very fondly you and so many of your colleagues at the Physicians for National Health Program, and we tried so hard. And I particularly remember you and Dr. Carol Paris, who is now the acting president of PNHP, that when President Obama said that, you know, when he was proposing his plans for health care, hey, if someone out there has a better idea, we welcome it. And you and Dr. Paris took him up on it. And was that the start of this amazing life you're having right now?
Yeah, and as you remember, we were arrested for doing that. You know, Dr. Paris and I had been working together, you know, for a while for National Improved Medicare for All. And I think that was just another event in that, you know, on that path. But we are both determined not to give up. This is really too important. The answer is so obvious, and the majority of people support it. So we think that, you know, at some point we're going to win.
Well, you know, Margaret, I remember going through with you and so many of your colleagues, all the reason, really, that offers really the only viable solution for people. And I know the point you made and so many of your colleagues made, that you didn't want to confuse insurance coverage, so to speak, with care, with actually health care. And wasn't that really what frustrated you way back when you were practicing in rural Maryland pediatrics, and you got so frustrated then you found a real difference between what you were almost forced to do by the insurance companies and by the money fundingness and what your patients really needed?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that's what so many physicians are experiencing in the United States right now. It's why our burnout rates are so high, is that, you know, we go to school for long periods of time, we train, we come out, we want to practice and focus on our patients, and you find that these insurance administrators who have many times often no medical training at all, they're just looking at a computer screen and they don't have the interest of the patient in mind, they serve as roadblocks to being able to provide the care that patients need. And it's all about money instead of about health. And so that's actually why we created the campaign Health Over Profit, because we want a healthcare system that, like many other countries have, where the bottom line is improving the health of the population.
Yeah, and that's all you hear, I mean, constantly at the bottom line. And then also and I remember you and so many of your colleagues were pointing out the real problems that this was going to be. And really how, and I'd rather you tell it, Margaret. What do you think about the Affordable Care Act? I know what you thought back then. But what do you think now and some of the problems we're having?
Well, I think that, you know, the problems that we predicted would occur back then are occurring. You know, families are experiencing high premiums. The out-of-pocket costs through co-pays and deductibles are rising. So while more people have private health insurance, they're also continuing to face financial barriers so that they can't afford to get the care that they need, or, you know, experiencing financial ruin if they have a serious problem. Now, I know some people have been helped, and that's a good thing, but in the United States, we're already paying twice as much as most other industrialized countries per person per year on health care. So we believe that nobody should have to face, you know, financial barriers to care or go without care. I think one positive aspect of the Affordable Care Act was that it expanded Medicaid in 33 states, and that meant that millions more people, lower income, you know, particularly vulnerable people, were able to get care. I think it also showed, and this is being reflected in polling right now, that, you know, public health insurances can work. They can actually protect people in times of need. And so we're seeing more conservatives who are supportive of public programs like Medicaid and Medicare.
And Margaret, tell me, politics aside just right now, we'll come back to that. What kind of a system would you like to see for this country?
I think, you know, really we have kind of two choices. One would be a national health service like they have in the United Kingdom, where the government owns and operates the system. Those are very efficient systems and work well when they're funded appropriately. The UK has been under attacks in that regard. But the other, you know, the one that we're mostly advocating for is national improved Medicare for all. It means that every person living in the country would be in the system from the time they're born until the time that they die. They don't have to renew each year or pick up a plan. It would be financed upfront through our taxes, so there would be no premiums or copays or deductibles. It would just be a tax like we have right now through Medicare. And then people would choose where they want to go. All of the health professionals would be in it. The health professionals could just focus on their patients' needs. They submit an easy claim form, you know, to the government, which would reimburse them. And, you know, it would be comprehensive. It would cover all medically necessary care, including long-term care. I think this is really important, that we can't consider a system to be comprehensive if it doesn't include long-term care for the tens of millions of people in the United States that rely on that.
And, you know, Margaret, constantly, you know, because I've been battling for this for a long time, too, and so totally agree with you that this is the only way to go. And to me, it would be the best way to go. It would really give health care to everybody. But I find that, you know, that now when I'm reading, you know, about Amazon, you know, Bezos and Warren Buffett and Jamie Dimon, you know, J.P. Morgan Chase, that they've decided that they're going to get into the game. I guess they're suggesting that the for-profit, you know, will disappear. And I always find when I mentioned, you know, Medicare for all, single payer, they'll just say, I get people to say, well, in this political atmosphere, there's not a chance. You're just adding to the problem, you know. And I think that just the fact that these three biggies, Amazon, you know, and Buffett and Bezos or Diamond, want to get into this kind of says that you better believe healthcare is on everybody's mind and that this is indeed the time to be talking about single-payer Medicare for all.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more on that. And I think throughout 2017, that was really clear as the Republicans attempted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. People came out across the country saying, we don't want less health care. We don't want fewer people covered. We want a national improved Medicare for all, a single-payer health care system. Warren Buffett and his partner, Charles Munger, came out saying that businesses are significantly hurt by our current healthcare system, and a single-payer system is the best way to lower costs and make sure that everybody gets coverage. It's interesting to see them coming out with this proposal because really, you know, for over a decade now, we've just seen people within the system trying all sorts of creative ways to try to work around it. You know, boutique practices where doctors drop out of, you know, not taking health insurance anymore. And, you know, all these different kinds of experiments that are being tried to circumvent the fact that we have a very dysfunctional system. And what we don't really need all of these efforts. What we don't want people forming their own systems and dropping out of the main system. We want everybody to band together and say, look, let's fix this. We're the only industrialized country that doesn't have a universal healthcare system. We have the money to pay for it. Let's create a national improved Medicare for all.
And, you know, Margaret, I remember you and I were talking way back, and to me, it's always been that if this country really, you know, accepted and realized responsibility and the human right that health care really is, and really put its people first and actually got a really good health care system for people, that to me it would be a significant turning point, you might say, where this government started to, rather than just, you know, bow down and follow the interests of the uber wealthy and the military and for all the wars, etc., that it actually would start to care about its people. And to me, I've always felt that healthcare would be a really important turnaround, if you will, on the attitudes of this country to its people.
Absolutely. And that's what other countries experienced as well, is that when you have systems that everybody is in the system, you know, a sense of social solidarity. So many countries that have, you know, universal education systems, healthcare, affordable housing, these kinds of things. Well, when it's recognized that everybody's in that system, then everybody fights for it together. It creates this real sense of social solidarity that unites people, which I'm sure everybody could agree that we need so much in this country right now. And when we win a national improved Medicare for all, it will also empower us to believe that we have the power to fight for these things and win, and we can fight for the other things that we need so desperately in our country, like, you know, oh gosh, I mean, there's so many you could list: education, transportation, housing, you know, higher wages and better worker protections, addressing the climate crisis. And, you know, it would really empower us as a people to fight for what we need.
Yeah, and I've really followed your career, you know, and I had you on actually when you were running for Senate, and following that you were a pediatrician and you particularly worked with children, but then you have morphed, so to speak, to becoming, if you will, a physician for society and a physician to trying to heal the totally dysfunctional political system in our country. Because I remember when you and other colleagues were, you know, being kicked out of meetings, being arrested, etc. And single-payer Medicare for all was never really on the table being considered. And I remember so vividly that when you said that, actually, and I think this was in the Bill Moyers interview, too, you gave, that you found that as you went along, you realized the real problem in fighting, keeping you people and these ideas off the table when it was being discussed was actually from the very top. It was coming from the White House. And kind of the evolution of you from this caring pediatrician to this caring person about our political illness, if you will, that really is having, has a raging temperature, if you will. That actually is a sickness too, isn't it? Our political dysfunction.
Well, absolutely. And now we have academic studies that prove it, that we actually live in a plutocracy where the, you know, the system is designed to serve the interests of the wealthy and not of the people. And I think even more so now it feels like a kleptocracy where they're just stealing, you know, everything that they can, privatizing and trying to privatize more of our public lands and schools and things like that. I think what, you know, being a physician, when I recognize a problem, you know, my instinct is to look at what are the root causes of it, not the symptoms of it, but what's underneath there causing it. And then how do we address that in a way that really cures it? And so we're fortunate that we have lots of research on how social movements work. And so a lot of my, you know, time and attention has been focused on how do we build a social movement that actually has the power to overcome the power of the elite power holders and win. And so we've been successful on some campaigns that we've been engaged in through net neutrality and fighting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And now we're getting ready to launch a popular resistance school to help share that information with other people across the country so they can be more effective in the work that they're doing.
What is it, Margaret, with you and your colleague Jill Stein, an MD, Howard Dean, et cetera? So many of you doctors realize the real illness is in our political system.
Yeah.
Well, and Margaret, we're really excited because you're going to be not only one of the keynote speakers at the upcoming Healthcare for All conference over in Palm Beach, but also you're going to be giving some workshops. And so when you come here down to Florida, what are you hoping? You're going to give us more information, and also probably are you going to give us more of a sense of how to be activists to try and address this political illness, if you will?
Yes, I will be talking about, you know, National Improved Medicare for All and kind of the ins and outs, nuts and bolts of that. But I'm also going to be talking with people about how, you know, what are the kinds of things we can expect from the opposition? How do we counter those when we expect them? How do we get our message out? So a lot of kind of the practicalities of how we can win National Improved Medicare for All as well.
And Arlene, did you want to say anything?
Oh, just wanted to let people know about the conference. We've mentioned it before, but it will be in West Palm Beach on February 16th and 17th at right. The Embassy Suites Hotel Ballrooms and Conference Centers. That's 1601 Belvedere Road in West Palm Beach. And you can check out all the information on the website floridahealthcaresummit.org. But our object and our goal for our reason for putting this together was to try to get a grassroots effort going to attain health care for all in the state of Florida. And I know there's no one better to talk about that than Margaret Flowers.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate Arlene helping to get me invited to the conference. I look forward to, spending time with everyone down there.
Well, Dr. Flowers, you're one of the real heroes, following you, in your, I always think of you, I remember way back when you said, that you were so frustrated practicing pediatrics in this rural community, and, you'd have your little patients and, what's wrong? Well, it hurts. And so, as a doctor, when a child says that to you, or I don't feel good, you have to do more than just fill out the forms and say, well, this is the allocation, and you can't talk about that now because we've got to look at this. And I can't think of a person better that would look now and say, what's wrong here? When we say, well, I don't feel good, And so I'm really thrilled that you're coming down. So thank you so much. I know how busy you are. And your Popular Resistance newsletter, I really find is excellent. And I know you're also involved. I think you're the co-editor of that. And right. For the listeners who might want to get on your mailing list, I find it's just excellent. And so thanks literally for all you have done and you are doing.
Well, thank you. And also check out healthoverprofit.org. We're having our first single payer action camp coming up in April. So that's at healthoverprofit.org.
And where will that be?
That's going to be in Washington, D.C. We'll have 2 days of workshops and trainings and then 2 days of actions to put those skills to use.
Yeah, and with with all the energy of the Women's March, I'm putting the two together, and I think that that people want to improve conditions for people, and to me, so many people almost need help, almost seminars and activism, if you will, and so to me, that's a terrific topic to really get in there and fight for healthcare for all, and I know how well you people will do it. So, Margaret Flowers, again, thank you so much for giving us this time.
Thank you.
You take care.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And support for WMNF comes from our members and the Capitol Theater presenting Judy Collins Thursday, February 15th at thecap.org has more. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have a pair of tickets for the Healthcare Summit. If you would like to go down to Palm Beach for February 16th and 17th, give me a call at 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663.
Well, this next topic, to tell you the truth, it's one of the hardest topics, actually, and particularly this whole last week, these last weeks, if you will, the whole aspect of the sexual assaults, the sexual attacks, etc. And we're so aware of Me Too and Time's Up. But a case I hope you've been following, because I'm kind of sad, actually, that I do not think what's been happening with the gymnasts and Michigan State and Dr. Larry Nassar has really gotten the attention that it really deserves, Penn State, in that horrific situation, I don't know why. Maybe it was because it was football, maybe because it was Joe Paterno. But I hope you have been following it, because when I started to follow it, I realized very quickly that this was far more than just sports, that this was assault, but even more so, the young women, and many of these young women were assaulted when they were 8, 10, 12, 14, and it continued for years by the preeminent gymnastics doctor, and the whole system that in some ways enabled him to have access to these young women, to hear their stories and to hear how they work through this and their pain. I found that the more I was trying to figure out how I could cover this and was, talking to guests, whether they were psychologists or doctors or, Nancy Hogshead Makar, who actually was one of the first. And here in Florida, she is is a treasure. She, like you probably also know, that she won 3 gold medals in swimming. But she also was involved for years with the Women's Sports Foundation. And I had her on the show about 4 or 5 years ago. And she was really concerned about the abuse of children in swimming. And she was even more concerned the way these coaches were being rotated around to different places. And that there wasn't the formal procedure for reporting, etc. And she was really bringing attention then, and this was in swimming. And she's testifying right now in Congress, you know, what she feels it should be done, not only with swimming, but also, of course, with gymnastics. But the more I was trying to talk and email people to figure out how to cover this subject well, I was also listening to these young women and the power of their stories and their strength and their courage. And, you know, we had seen these young women in the Olympics. I mean, we marveled at their ability to leap and twist and twirl and on that balance beam, that kind of courage. And so, you know, you felt you knew these people. And I had no idea that this stuff was going on behind the scenes. And so the more I listened to them, the more I thought that no one can cover this story better than they can. And that they can tell their stories. And I think, you know, at the same time I was following, Wynn in Vegas and the casino magnate. And some of the charges against him by particularly people that worked in the casino, the manicurists, the massage therapists, etc. And I think one of the aspects that horrified me the most of the many accusations that were made is that he had a lot of private rooms and private spaces, if you will. And he has German Shepherd guard dogs, and they only respond to German commands. And I'm listening to this with the gymnast talking about this doctor who was absolutely abandoning the basic tenet of medicine to care for your patient and the kind of trust and, you know, the responsibility that is. And I thought, whoa, I thought, you know. And we've dealt with enough sexual assaults on this show, whether it's in the military, whether it's in the schools, etc. And you've dealt with these women. And over again, you realize that why aren't they listened to? Why weren't they listened to? Why? And I think the saddest thing, the more I have researched into sexual assaults, and it is so prevalent in our society, the more I am convinced that there are predators. And these predators, unfortunately, set the tone. And like on college campuses, to me, it is so sad that when they finally listened to some of the women on these various campuses, they would find many times that it would be the same individual or same 3 or 4 individuals who would perpetrate these crimes, particularly on incoming freshmen, etc. And they found the same thing in the military, and they find the same thing on the football teams and the other athletic teams. And I'm not saying, you know, that they're only the problem. Because to me, violence against women, whether it's a sexual assault or otherwise, it's a whole spectrum, if you will. And this is where we all have to realize, we have to listen to the stories of these young gymnasts. We have to listen to the stories of the people coming out in Me Too. And time's up. Or we know the housework or the domestic workers that work in all those hotels, etc., they have the highest incidence of sexual assaults. Why don't we listen? Because if we listened, and if we cared, and if we stopped protecting the brand, whether the brand is a school, or the brand is a military, or the brand is a police, or whoever the organization is, because then we put a double whammy on this woman, why don't we listen? And we need to realize we are all a part of the spectrum of the violence. There is a lot we can do. We can particularly not tolerate, whether it's verbal or it's physical, a predator that we're aware of. If we stand by and think, oh, I don't want to say anything because, you know, if this is all our responsibility. And so I hope that you actually take the time, if you can. Most of these are on YouTube or any number of articles. There were over 156 of them that testified. And they were so powerful. I hope you do take the time because we're just going to do some snippets. And let's put this music on first by First Aid Kit and then just a really quick, general, little brief thing. of these women. And so you're the problem here.
I am so sick and tired of this world. All these women with their dreams shattered. From some man's sweaty, desperate touch. God damn it.
If something hurts, don't speak up. If someone's screaming at you, don't speak up.
He was the Olympic doctor, so he must be doing this, you know, to other girls, and nobody has said anything. So something must be wrong with me thinking that it was wrong.
When I first found out when the IndyStar article came out, I honestly was in denial.
My parents told me that he had been arrested. I immediately knew, and my entire world came crashing down.
Well, I want to give you the background to this, that the rumors, as I say, Nancy Hogshead has been fighting, particularly with the swimming community, Nancy Hogshead Maker, and she was aware of the abuse from coaches, et cetera, and they rotated them around, not unlike Penn State staying quiet about Sandusky, not unlike actually the scandals with the priest. It was bad enough that they committed these crimes, but they rotated them around. They tried to hide it. And so they were aware of this. And so the Indianapolis Star, some very good reporters there, led by Tim Evans and some others, that they were wondering, the Gymnastics Federation, then the national headquarters, were actually there. And so they were hearing these rumors about gymnastics. And so they were trying to check out and see what the heck was happening. Tim realized that there was a case that was down in Louisville and that this young gymnast was bringing charge against this coach. And so he went down, and then the dam kind of broke, and some of the people started to talking. So actually in August of 2016, the Indy Star came out with an article, and it was called Out of Balance. And they revealed, particularly these five big coaches that had, there were over 150 complaints against these coaches. And they were rotated into different gyms. It's a complicated system. Most of the gymnasiums in this country that where the little athletes train are private. And so they don't have the standardization. And again, you had the protection of, you know, the brand, if you will. Well, then the very next day after that article came out, Evans got an email from Rachel Denhollander. And Rachel Denhollander was saying that reading this article, she'd been wanting to come out for years. And she realized that she must do it because she felt that she could be doing something perhaps to stop this from happening. And you have to realize, here we have an Olympic gymnast, but we also have a woman that went on and was aware of some of the stuff that was happening to her. She talked to some of her colleagues. And honestly, some of the devastation it did to this young woman. I would suggest if you have time, you read about her. But Rachel also then got her law degree. And Rachel is, I think, one of the genuine heroes. And so when the judge, because Rachel was the first one to bring the criminal complaint, and she was the last one to testify. And the judge, Aquilina, they sometimes call her Barracuda Aquilina, said, "You are the general of this army." And she was the courageous one. But anyway, she sent this email and said that she was going to bring the charge against Dr. Larry Nassar, the physician. And so would they be interested? And he said, oh, absolutely. Well, then a week later, they got an email from a lawyer that was representing Jamie Dentzler, who was also had been abused by Larry Nassar. And then just a few days later, they got another. And this time it was from a woman that actually wanted to be anonymous. And I just have her name here somewhere. I just can't find it. Jessica Howard, and you have to realize she's in the Gymnastics Hall of Fame for rhythmic gymnastics, and they thought, what do we have going here? And so then Rachel was the one that got the whole ball rolling. And unfortunately, the testimony in the courtroom, Rachel's has a very soft voice, really. And it didn't pick up real well in the courtroom, so there's plenty of valuable for her giving interviews before and afterwards. But I didn't actually bring anything from the courtroom from Rachel. But this actually, I think, is so sobering, because this is actually her, when she was talking about it before. And she's going to be talking about it, and I think it's so important here to realize the bridge that these young women have made. Because Dr. Nassar was really very clever, you might say. And when she talks about her mother being in the room and how that bothered her, you have a sense of how far Rachel actually was able to go. So this is Rachel Denhollander, truly a general of this army.
Very embarrassed. And I was very confused, trying to reconcile what was happening with the person that he was supposed to be. Everybody who's a gymnast knows who Nassar is. He's not just a normal sports med doc. He is extremely personable, extremely gregarious, very warm, very caring. He's the type of person that knows how to make you want to trust him. There's a reason he's risen to his place of prominence. And honestly, part of what grieves me so much is that he has everything he needs to be an incredible leader. He has the personality, he has the skill, he has the knowledge. And he's using that to prey on people. What a waste. I had a lot of pain in my wrists and in my back. I have a couple vertebrae that don't bend, and so that put a lot of extra pressure on my wrists and on my back just because of that dynamic, and it got to a point where it was just very chronically painful, very difficult to do anything, difficult to sleep, very difficult, of course, to practice, to lift anything. There were several gymnasts at my gym who had gone up to see Nassar, and their parents recommended that we head up there, so we did. He suggested that he could do myofascial release and sports massage to help with those dynamics. And I had myofascial release done before by a physical therapist, so I consented. But as he was doing that, he also began to massage internally as well. My mom was actually in the room at the time, and he would just position me and position himself so that she could see what he was doing. And I didn't realize that she couldn't see. And so that was also part of the dynamic that kept me quiet. I thought if there was something wrong, surely my mom would speak up, but mom couldn't see what he was doing. And as I continued to see him, he would continue to progress in what he touched and where he touched and how he touched. And nothing was off limits for him. He never wore gloves, never. It's very difficult to come forward against somebody who's as prominent as he is. And so it's very possible USAG didn't know. And if they truly didn't know, hands clean, then no, I don't hold them responsible. If they did with him what they did to those other coaches, I absolutely do. So I think time will tell.
And time has certainly told Rachel what the story is, and she's really coming strongly out now for the Gymnastics Federation to all of them resign. Many of them have, but also to be actually examined, investigated by Congress or some really, truly independent organization, and totally, totally revamped. And, you know, I kind of feel I read so much and listened to so much about Rachel that I kind of know her. And she is an extraordinary young woman. Not only was she an Olympian, won Olympic medals, etc., but a lawyer. She loves children. And I thought it was fascinating when she was talking, she and her mother were talking about how difficult it was for them to work it out and to figure out what they could do. When she told her mother, and it took her a year to really tell her mother, break down and tell her mother. And her mother didn't know. She was horrified. And so what should they do? And they decided actually that Dr. Larry Nassar was so prominent, and this was some of the top, this was the national team, that no one would listen to them. That they would just, you know, be disregarded, and that her coming out publicly and doing this would actually totally destroy her career. But it gnawed away at her. She really felt that she was failing. And then as she went on and she realized that Ali Reisman and some of her other colleagues were also wondering what the heck was happening. What kind of treatments were there? And Rachel loves children. And she said that, you know, that when Larry was first examining her, et cetera, he realized that her hips were slightly rotated, which isn't at all uncommon with gymnasts, with everything they do. And so also then after she's got four kids, after she had a couple of her kids, the hips were rotated slightly. And again, it needed treatment. And Rachel said it was nothing at all like the treatment she got from Dr. Nassar. And I thought, to me, one of the saddest things that I read about Rachel, this brilliant, young, courageous woman, was that she said she had still has problems with intimacy. She has problems particularly trusting male doctors and men. And she actually met her husband, who is the sweetest guy, online. And so, you know, they communicated online, et cetera, and then they got together and talked. He's actually a Canadian citizen. And Jacob thought that she was just the most phenomenal person he had ever met. He thought she was so accomplished and such a super nice person, et cetera. And Rachel said to him, even though that they obviously cared a great deal about each other, that she couldn't continue the relationship. She said, I can't. She said, I'm damaged goods. And he said, what do you mean? He said, you are the most special, most amazing person I've ever met. And so she told him the story of what Dr. Nassar did to her. And he said, whatever you decide to do, he said, I will be with you the entire way, and we will get through this together. And so many of the young women, and I listened to so many of them, felt that they had done something wrong and that they were damaged. And they wanted to bury it just as deep as they could and put it out of their mind. And we are talking Olympic athletes. We are talking young women who have the courage to stand up on that balance beam or go up on those, you know, uneven parallel bars and twirl and twist. And if they did anything wrong, they could so easily break their necks and their backs. This is incredible physical courage. But the kind of courage it took for them to deal, and they were assaulted when they were children or young teenagers. And by this person who was looked upon as the tops in the profession. And as so many of these women said, which really, really bothered me, is that where were the coaches when they would be saying, is this the treatment I need for my torn gastroc or whatever? Oh, this is the best doctor of all. And I don't know if we'll get time really today because we don't have a lot of time, but the testimony by one of the gymnasts, Maddie Larson, is probably about as powerful as you can get. And we might get some of it. But right now, I want to put on Jordan Weaver. And she, again, is one of the many Olympics and won medals, et cetera. She was fabulous. But I guess the Gymnastics Federation didn't care too much about her for other things. So let's give a listen to Jordan Weaver.
Jordan Weaver, J-O-R-D-Y-N-W-I-E-B-E-R.
Thank you. What would you like me to know?
I first of all want to thank you for allowing us to speak here. I thought that training for the Olympics would be the hardest thing that I would ever have to do. But in fact, the hardest thing I've ever had to do is process that I'm a victim of Larry Nassar. It has caused me to feel shame and confusion. And I've spent months trying to think back on my experience and wonder how I didn't even know this was happening to me and how I became so brainwashed by Larry and everyone at USA Gymnastics, both whom I thought were supposed to be on my side. I started seeing Larry Nassar at the age of 8, right here in my hometown of Lansing. He was known as the best gymnastics doctor in the world. Everyone at my club, on the U.S. national team, and across the country saw Larry, and everyone said the same thing. He was a miracle worker, and he could fix just about anything. I was treated by Larry for any and all of my injuries from ages 8 till I was 18. And it wasn't long before he had gained my trust. He became a safe person of sorts. And to my teenage self, he appeared to be the good guy in an environment that was intense and restricting. He would try to advise me on how to deal with the stresses of training or my coaches. He would bring us food and coffee at the Olympics when we were too afraid to eat too much in front of our coaches. I didn't know that these were all grooming techniques that he used to manipulate me and brainwash me into trusting him. And when I was 14 years old, I tore my hamstring in my right leg. This was when he started performing the procedure that we are all now familiar with. I would cringe at how uncomfortable it felt. He did it time after time, appointment after appointment, convincing me that it was helping my hamstring injury. And the worst part was I had no idea that he was sexually abusing me for his own benefit. I knew it felt strange, but he was the national team doctor. Who was I to question his treatments or even more, risk my chance at making the Olympic team or being chosen to compete internationally? And after all, he was recommended by the national team staff, and he treated us monthly at all of our national team camps. I had even talked to my teammates, Allie Raisman and Michaela Maroney, about this treatment and how uncomfortable it made us feel. None of us really understood it. After I made the Olympic team, I suffered a stress fracture in my right shin. It was extremely painful to tumble and land using my legs, but I fought through the pain because it was the Olympics, and I knew it would be probably my only shot.
Can you slow down just a little?
Yes, ma'am.
Appreciate
our bodies were all hanging by a thread when we were in London. Who was the doctor that USAG sent to keep us healthy and help us get through? The doctor that was our abuser. The doctor that is a child molester. Because of my shin, I couldn't train without being in extreme pain, and it affected the number of routines I could do to prepare before the competition. And ultimately, it made me feel less prepared than I should have been. I didn't qualify to the all-around competition, and I went through a dark time right before we won the team gold. Now, I question everything about that injury and the medical treatment I received. Was Larry even doing anything to help my pain? Was I getting the proper medical care? Or was he only focused on which one of us he was going to prey on next? What was he think about when he massaged my sore muscles every day? Now I question everything. To this day, I still don't know how he could have been allowed to do this for so long. My teammates and I were subjected to his medical care every single month at the National Team Training Center in Texas. He was the only male allowed to be present in the athlete dorm rooms to do whatever treatments he wanted. He was allowed to treat us in hotel rooms alone without any supervision. He took photos of us during training and whenever else he wanted. Nobody was protecting us from being taken advantage of. Nobody was even concerned whether or not we were being sexually abused.
Why weren't people watching? Why weren't people listening? Because they were wondering what was happening. And another eloquent woman who was speaking, Allie Raisman. I'm sure you're familiar with her incredible routines. Let's hear Allie Raisman.
Your Honor, thank you for the opportunity to make this statement here today. And thank you for providing the time and flexibility for all the other brave survivors to make their statement. Each survivor deserves to be heard equally. I didn't think I would be here today. I was scared and nervous. It wasn't until I started watching the impact statements from the other brave survivors that I realized I too needed to be here. Larry, you do realize now that we, this group of women you so heartlessly abused over such a long period of time, are now a force and you are nothing. The tables have turned, Larry. We are here. We have our voices, and we are not going anywhere. And now, Larry, it's your turn to listen to me. There is no map that shows you the pathway to healing. Realizing that you are a survivor of sexual abuse is really hard to put into words. I cannot adequately capture the level of disgust I feel when I think about how this happened. Larry, you abused the power and trust I and so many others placed in you, and I am not sure I will ever come to terms with how horribly you manipulated and violated me. You were the USA Gymnastics national team doctor, the Michigan team doctor. You were trusted by so many and took advantage of countless athletes and their families. The effects of your actions are far-reaching. Abuse goes way beyond the moment, often haunting survivors for the rest of their lives, making it difficult to trust and impacting their relationships. It is all the more devastating when such abuse comes at the hand of such a highly regarded doctor, since it leaves survivors questioning the organizations and even the medical profession itself, upon which so many rely. I am here to face you, Larry, so you can see I've regained my strength, that I'm no longer a victim, I'm a survivor. I am no longer that little girl you met in Australia, where you first began grooming and manipulating. As for your letter yesterday, you are pathetic to think that anyone would have any sympathy for you. You think this is hard for you? Imagine how all of us feel. Imagine how it feels to be an innocent teenager in a foreign country, hearing a knock on the door, and it's you. I don't want you to be there, but I don't have a choice. Treatments with you were mandatory. You took advantage of that. You even told on us if we didn't want to be treated by you, knowing full well the troubles that would cause for us. Lying on my stomach with you on my bed, insisting that your inappropriate touch would help to heal my pain. The reality is you caused me a great deal of physical, mental, and emotional pain. You never healed me. You took advantage of our passions and our dreams. You made me uncomfortable, and I thought you were weird. But I felt guilty because you were a doctor, so I assumed I was the problem for thinking badly of you. I wouldn't allow myself to believe that the problem is you. From the time we were little, we are taught to trust doctors. You are so sick, I can't even comprehend how angry I feel when I think of you. You lied to me and manipulated me to think that when you treated me, you were closing your eyes because you had been working hard when you were really touching me, an innocent child, to pleasure yourself. Imagine feeling like you have no power and no voice. Well, you know what, Larry? I have both power and voice, and I am only beginning to just use them. All these brave women have power, and we will use our voices to make sure you get what you deserve, a life of suffering spent replaying the words delivered by this powerful army of survivors.
Indeed, they are a powerful army of survivors. And I really suggest that you listen to some of those testimonies. You can readily find it. And I don't know if you got the Grammys, if you watched them last Sunday, if you heard Keisha and saw all the women on white in the stage. And so let's go out. You've been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Let's go out with Keisha and praying.
Am I dead? Or is this one of those dreams? Those horrible dreams that seem like they last forever. If I am alive, why? Why? If there's a God or whatever, something, somewhere, why have I been abandoned by everyone and everything I've ever known, I've ever loved? Stranded. What is the lesson? What is the point? God, give me a sign or I have to give up. I can't do this anymore. Please just let me die. Being alive hurts too much.
Thank you. had me fooled. Told me that I was nothing without you. Oh, but after everything you've done, I can thank you for how strong I have become. 'Cause you brought the flames and you put me through.